Good evening. It's Dan, and it's February the 15th, 2019. And I have some good news. I feel as if I'm going to bury you all, the one or two people that listen to me consistently, in a lot of negative news. It is incumbent upon me to relay some positive news. Even if it is or seems incongruous with my general, I don't know, temperament, state of mind, essence, whatever. The good news is that a person I know, to remain anonymous, is going to help me pay my rent for the month. And so, even though I still don't have a really great plan or a really solid strategy for how I'm going to or how for how I'm going to solve my own personal economic problems going forward, it does buy me some time. And I really did dread, I can't exaggerate this enough, I dreaded on a very deep level the idea that one possibility for me, and I do think it was a possibility, I'm not saying it was probable, but there was a possibility that I would end up homeless. And the reason why that's a scary thing, well, it's manyfold, manifold. There are many features to this, but one of the features of my dread about homelessness is that in Seattle, there is this general, almost without thought, instantaneous judgment that all the homeless people in Seattle are layabouts and drug addicts and crazy people, and whatever hell they're in, they deserve. And can't we just build a giant toilet and flush them down it, or can't we just feed them to the orca whales? A lot of people will look at a city like Seattle, especially people from flyover country, which I've lived in. A lot of the red states will say, these are a bunch of liberals and commies. What is au contraire, mon frere? I don't speak French, but no. You're not seeing things correctly. The general zeitgeist of Seattle is almost at its core a weird mixture of techno-narcissism and a general belief that flipping homes is your pathway to success. And both of these phenomena work synergistically, and both of these phenomena, whether people want to admit it or not, help to increase the number of homeless people. I hate to break it to you. I know some of you might be intelligent enough to understand this, though many might be too fucking stupid. But probably more than half the people who are homeless are not drug addicts. They are not lazy. They are not crazy. They're not criminals. They're simply people who fell off the radar of human existence. They are part of that uncountable mass, that percentage of the labor force, whether it's 38% or 40% that we no longer count, we no longer talk about. We pretend they don't exist. Do I think some of the people who are homeless are drug addicts and crazy and criminals and lazy? Yeah. I mean, generally speaking, the bell curve for human failure applies to every fucking demographic, whether it's rich people or poor people. Oh, did you know that there are rich people who are lazy? I hate to break it to you, you stupid fuck. But there are rich people who are lazy. Did you know that there are wealthy people who are crazy? Hello, Mr. Fucking Stupid Seattleite and Maple Leaf. Yeah, there are rich people who are crazy. Did you know there are rich people who use drugs? Oh my God, Dan, you're blowing my fucking mind. Yeah. Sorry, you stupid fucktard who lives somewhere in the San Francisco area. There are rich people who do drugs. So all these negative things that people say about homeless people, and really it's a psychological strategy, because before you can throw away a human being, before you can treat them like garbage, you have to turn them psychologically into garbage. So one of the reasons why I dreaded becoming homeless is because once you become homeless, you are one of those unpeople to be labeled, to be described, to be discarded, to be dismissed, to be forgotten. And that's a tough place to be. The other reason why I dreaded it is the simple physics of it, the simple reality of it, the ecosystem aspect of it. If you're homeless, you lose your ability to engage with society. You lose your access to technology. There's this and other things as well. Access to, you know, medical care, access to the job market. There's this horror film, sci-fi film. I forget the name of the director. I think he's a Canadian director, and I'll probably remember it at some point, but it's not important. But there's this horror film called Videodrome from the early 80s. I think James Woods was the main character, where at one point in the horror film, some of the characters in the film had this weird kind of clinic for homeless people where they would have the homeless people come into the shelter and watch TV. Now, I gotta say, in retrospect, the whole thing seems kind of silly on so many levels. But the basic idea that homeless people get disconnected from society, and I should say modern society, technological society, and it becomes difficult for them to re-engage, well, that's actually, I think, very true. I'm not saying homeless people should watch TV. I'm fairly convinced when it comes to broadcast television, nobody should watch TV. I'll admit, I do have an internet connection and I do download videos. I do watch videos, but I don't miss really watching the program TV. Not at all. So the other aspect of being homeless is this way in which you physically, socially become disconnected so that it becomes very difficult to reconnect. Very difficult to find a way back. So the good news is that I am not going to be labeled a scumbag by this community, which I think is probably false. I think for a lot of people in Seattle who know me, I think I am a scumbag because I just don't buy into the bullshit. You know, people who talk about how their home, their tiny little home on a shitty piece of property is worth $1 million. And they drive a Volvo that's 20 years old and they shop at Value Village. And then they say, well, why don't people have jobs? Why are there homeless people? Well, you stupid fuck. Let me explain this to you, you fucking retard. And I'm sorry for using that word. I don't use it often, but it really does fucking apply. You retard. You're voluntarily saying you don't buy anything new. You're voluntarily saying that you're house poor. You're voluntarily saying that it makes sense that your 800 square foot piece of shit home is worth $1 million, but you're deeply fucking confused about why there's homeless people. If you sense anger or frustration in my voice whenever I'm doing a podcast about this subject, it's because I want to just hit these people over the head with a tack hammer. I do not understand. I cannot fathom how fucking stupid they are. Food, water, shelter. If you know what Maslow's hierarchy is, you need these things. These are not things you want, especially if you live in the Northern Hemisphere, especially, you know, since there is this thing called winter, and frankly, summer's not always that much better. You need food. You need water. You need shelter. It's nice to have healthcare. It's nice to have an iPhone. It's nice to have cable internet. It's nice to have a computer. It's nice to have a car. It's nice to have a girlfriend. But you actually need food, water, shelter. So you're deeply confused that this weird and very dysfunctional part of our economy that orients around the fetish of flipping houses and expecting the value of your home to increase greater than single digits on a year-on-year basis but you're deeply, deeply confused that there's lots of homeless people. I just don't get it. I really don't. I feel like I need to do more drugs to understand. And I don't mean shrooms, something way stronger than that. So avoiding being homeless is pretty cool, but reflecting on it and knowing that I could go there isn't so cool. I was walking, I live in Little Saigon, as you well know. I live off of 12th Avenue, and I was walking to the store today, and as I always do, because it's just the way it is, I pass some homeless people. But in this case, I passed a guy who was just kind of crazy. He was, you know, talking to himself. He was muttering. A friend of his, who wasn't quite so unstable, was trying to help him. But he was just talking into the darkness. It was early in the morning, dark out, and he was just muttering. It was almost like he could have been me. He could have been an out-of-work software engineer with a brilliant mind who has just not been able to process, you know, the life of a homeless person. He's not a huge fan of being nibbled on by the street bunnies, aka rats. He's not a huge fan of exposure, which means cold. He probably doesn't have access to fresh water. He could very well be suffering from multiple parasites and various things you kind of get exposed to in these dirty, nasty streets. And he's gone crazy. And the thought in my head this morning is, you know, there is, this is a quote, right? This is a kind of a famous quote for a lot of people. Maybe it's a cliche, but there, but for the grace of God. There, but for the grace of God, go I. I could end up, after a couple months of being homeless, crazier than I am. And that's a tall order. I could be the guy muttering into the darkness. I could be the guy that people say, well, what's he doing? And when I say this, most of the zombies, the normie zombies, are really just staring at their phones, their smart devices. Huh, crap, we live in such a funny society. Everything is labeled its opposite. You know, War on Terror, Patriot Act, smart device. If you really want to understand the meaning of these things, flip them over. But yeah, people staring at their smart device, so they don't necessarily recognize the crazy people, and if they have their earbuds in, they don't hear the crazy talk. There but for the grace of God. There is nothing romantic about people being homeless. I had a podcast, I think I did it yesterday, on the concept of the frontier as a phenomena in human history, and specifically American history. And, you know, one of the things I've thought about in the past, and I even remember when I was in graduate school having a conversation with some historians about this over a beer or two, as historians and philosophers are apt to do. It's all we're good for at times. It's why I'm so glad I redeemed myself by becoming a computer programmer. Sarcasm ends. But yeah, over a beer, we were talking about things like social dysfunction, homelessness, and even serial killers. And one of the things I threw on the table, being the brash and crazy young man that I was, is that what if one of the problems with our society is we no longer had a place where people could go, where there were no rules, no government, it was just basically a big open, you know, blank slate. And nobody wants to admit this, but if we actually had a place where people could go, where people could actually, you know, start again, really, then maybe some of these problems wouldn't be so bad. But no such place exists. The entire world has been carved up. The entire world has been turned into a grid. The entire world has been monitored and microphoned and cameraed. You know, I shouldn't say there are cameras everywhere. There are satellites looking down at us. You know, Elon Musk and others are launching all these micro 5G, these fifth generation satellites for very, you know, short wavelength telecommunications and super bandwidth mobile smart devices. The entire world has become and I think it's an open-air prison, but the entire world has become a thing that is observed and monitored all the time, and there is no space for the weirdos. I'm not saying I like serial killers, I do not, but I have this idea in my head that there was once a time where people, didn't have to victimize their neighbors as serial killers. They could just go off into the Rockies and kill as many bear and as many cougars as they wanted to. I'm not trying to romanticize it, but I do think that release valve, in the sense of, pressure building up, is missing. And there's nothing to replace it. There is no replacement. No amount of drugs. And I know there are psychopharmacologists out there who will get really upset if I say this, but no amount of drugs replaces that. I'm sorry, it doesn't. I mean, I use marijuana as a way to deal with some of my demons, but no amount of marijuana solves this problem. It doesn't. No amount of drinking, no amount of Prozac, no amount of Xanax, no amount of any of those really special little pills that get advertised, in your magazine. It doesn't. They don't solve it. Cigarettes don't solve it. Nothing solves it. The only thing that would solve it would be the space for people to exist and at least have some level of dignity. But there is none left. So people who become homeless, especially in a city like Seattle, they carve out for themselves the tiny little slivers of space that they can find. If you walk down Yesler, okay, if you walk down Yesler heading west towards the waterfront and you cross I-5, immediately after you cross I-5, look to your right. You'll see a little sliver of green space. Bordering the fence, bordering I-5, where there are tents and garbage and probably a lot of rats at night, and people are living there. This is how people are living. Last summer, when I was commuting to Microsoft, I would take the 554 near the I-90 overpass off of Rainier Avenue, and underneath the I-90 overpass, some dude, and it was really impressive. I gotta tell you, I was impressed as fuck. Some dude had taken plywood and other carpentry material and had actually built himself a home. I don't mean a tent. He actually built a kind of a home underneath the I-90 overpass. People are doing the best they can. And if you think that crackheads are building these homes, no, sorry. I'm not saying there aren't crackheads who are homeless, but as stated, there are rich people who are crackheads. So don't be a fucktard. If you're going to use the argument that, damn it, all those drug users, well, sorry. Read a book, read a magazine, do a little research. You will find scummy people who are rich and scummy people who are poor. I don't know why I have to say this. It's sad that I do. It may be a sign of how terrible our public education system is. But I will repeat this again. You will find crazy, lazy, drug-using people in every strata of America. And arguably, you'll find more at the top because they have the resources to be lazy, crazy, drug addicts. For the most part, and I've learned this recently, when you get really poor, unless you want to die, you kind of have to worry about food, water, and shelter. It's nice to have weed, but guess what? When I don't have money, I don't buy weed. I get food. I would love to be able to get some weed if I could, but no, I do the food and the shelter and the water first. So it's good news. It's good news. I have a lease on life. The lease, only takes me to March, but I do have a lease on life. I do have an extra chunk of time between the food bank and the help from a friend. I'm going to make it a little bit longer without having to have to drop off the radar of American society. I even have help with my phone. So I will be able to effectively interview. But if you consider all of the things you need in order to get a job, and I don't even mean a software engineering job, I mean a Joe job. If you just want to get a job washing dishes in Seattle, you need to have some resources to get that job. If you think that homeless people can walk into a restaurant and say, I would like to be your dishwasher, given the stigma, given the prejudice, given how narrow-minded most of these so-called open-minded fucks are, no, sorry, I'm sorry you're I know I'm being mean, but I'm sorry you're so fucking stupid there in Magnolia or Maple Leaf or Ballard. I'm really sorry you're that fucking stupid, but actually you have to have money to make money in this sense. It's definitely true. And are there homeless resources? Yeah, there are. Okay? I'll let you on a little secret because I visited some of those resources in the last month. If you are a mother with children, and I think that this is reasonable, if you are a mother and you have children, there are more resources. If you are an immigrant, there are a ton of resources. If you are a white male, single, no children, around the age of 50, and I don't care if you're a veteran or not, because I'm a veteran, not of combat, but yes, I did serve. Doesn't matter. If you're in my demographic, there aren't that many resources. People like me, society is happy if we're tax slaves. But if we're unable to be tax slaves, society would prefer if we just dried up and blew away, if we simply died. I'm okay with that in the sense that I understand the historical contingency of it. I get it. I am at peace with the fact that we live in a very messed up time, and the reasons are obvious to people who have eyes to see and ears to hear. But for a lot of people who are simply staring at their glowing rectangles, their smart devices, they're clueless to it, but I do get it. I don't think I should be forward in line ahead of a mother or a father, a single parent with children. They need to be the priority. It's triage. But bluntly speaking, if you're in my demographic, it's a very lonely fucking place to be white male, almost 50 and straight in Seattle, with really almost no family, no kids, virtually no friends. It's a deeply fucking lonely place to be these days. And if on top of it, you don't buy into the zeitgeist, you don't buy into the spirit of the time, you don't believe that flipping shelter is either a moral or rational, you know, basis for an economy, if you don't believe that the solution to the quote-unquote STEM crisis is to ship in more engineers from places where people live under totalitarian rule, if you actually believe the STEM crisis, the science, technology, engineering, and math crisis, is actually a big giant F, as in fail, on your public schools, that's how you should think about it if you're a rational person. But again, this is kind of one of those catch-22 things. If your public schools are really fucked up, there's not a lot of rational people. Not a lot of people who know how to use logic. If you see the world the way I do, yeah, you might as well just die. If you can't pay your taxes because you're working, you might as well just be dead. That is how it feels. And again, I'm just being honest here, and I'm actually in a good mood, so this isn't me feeling sorry for myself. That's how it feels to be a person like me in Seattle in 2019. The person at the party that everybody would prefer would just fucking go away. And I'm not alone. I have, you know, one of the things, and I'm really thankful for this, there have been some folks in the last few weeks, the one or two or three or four, who listen to my podcasts and read some of my shitty essays, there have been some folks who've reached out to me, and really it's been mostly positive feedback, with one or two exceptions. And I have come to this realization, and I do avoid naming names. I just don't want to, you know, document people on my podcast. But for those, you know, primarily men who reached out to me, they get it because they go through the same thing. Now, the solutions for a lot of these other people is, Dan, leave Seattle. But I've lived in Indianapolis. I've lived in Dayton, Ohio. I've lived in El Paso, Texas. I've lived in South Korea. I am telling you from my perspective, the madness that I see here is in a lot of places. It isn't just Seattle. When I left Seattle after my divorce in 2014 and went to Indianapolis, one of the first fucking things I noticed, because again, I'd lived there a long time ago. It's why I went back there. My basic logic was, Dan, the last place you were happy before you met your ex-wife was Indianapolis. It was where you settled after you left the army. Why not give it a shot? That may be stupid reasoning, but that was my reasoning. One of the first fucking things I saw when I reached Indianapolis in 2014 were these stupid fucking Agenda 21 bike lanes. And I thought to myself, holy fuck. You know, I thought, you know, it's kind of like the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. You know, the black and white version. The dude thinks he'll drive far enough out of town that he'll get to a town that's safe, and then he sees a truck filled with pods. That's how I felt. I thought, holy fuck. But it gets worse. I noticed the same things. Like, I remember back in 2007, and again, I'm flipping back to Seattle here. I moved to Seattle from Nashville in 2007, okay? Back home, right, to Washington State. And I noticed 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, that the number of prostitutes on Aurora Avenue just kept increasing. It was too obvious, to the point that I think it was the summer of 2010, it seemed like there were mother, daughter, father, son, prostitute, you know, small businesses every quarter mile from, you know, 65th Street up to 120th Street on Aurora. It was gross. It was horrible. I thought, how can we have this amazing Obama economic recovery if it seems like in a nonlinear way, the number of sex workers is increasing on Aurora? It makes no sense. Now, of course, no one's going to report on this. If you think the Seattle Times would have reported on this, I got stories for you. No one reports on this. I get to Indianapolis in 2014, and I'm on Washington, I think Washington Street one day during the summer, and I see all of this prostitution up and down Washington Street, and I say to myself, this is terrible. I was with a taxi driver, and I said, is this normal now? And the guy said, yeah, and it's just getting worse. Have you ever heard the phrase, the jungle? Well, and I'm not talking about the book by Upton Sinclair. I'm talking about the phrase, the jungle, that gets applied, you know, in cities when it comes to homeless encampments. Some people will say, well, you know, we have the jungle like it's special. I hate to break it to you guys. Indianapolis, you go far enough, and I want to say far enough west on Washington Street, and you cross the White River. Yeah, there's a jungle there. Seattle has a jungle, has multiple jungle encampments. There are cities in Oregon and California, everywhere. I mean, the only places that don't have tons and tons of homeless people, it isn't so much about money. Most of the places that don't have tons of homeless people have very low population. I seriously doubt there are a lot. I don't think there are tons of homeless people, you know, on Kodiak Island in Alaska for a couple reasons. One, population. Two, not a great place to be homeless. Alaska in general, probably not the best place to be homeless and poor. So there are places in this country, and it's not just because of money, and it's not just because of politics, and I'm so sorry for those of you who don't get it, I gotta keep repeating, it's not just because of drugs or mental illness or laziness. There are places in this country that probably don't have huge homeless problems because they are A, lower population, and B, hard enough places to live even if you have money. Difficult enough even if you have a job. But if you don't have resources, being homeless could be a death sentence. Being homeless means you freeze to death some winter night and the coyotes take the rest. So yeah, I'm in a great mood. I am happy that I have avoided, at least for a bit longer, what seemed like a kind of death sentence. It really did. I am happy that there's at least one person in my life, and I don't know, I truly don't know if this person wants to help me as much as this person is driven to do so by this person's principles. But pragmatically speaking, I thank the Lord in heaven that there is at least one person in my life who, despite all my failures, still cares enough to keep me off the streets. That's an amazing thing. And this very same person was willing to let me into their home a year ago, and this very same person would let me into their home again. And I thank the Lord in heaven that this person exists. This person's not perfect. We haven't always got along. If I was a really shitty person, I could tell you stories, but overall, I can't lie. This person is a blessing at this point. And maybe in that sense, you know, some of my prayers of the last month have paid off. I don't want to go too deep into religion. I know a lot of you might not be religious, and this is your business. I often say I don't sell God, and let's be blunt about that. There is a kind of evangelical commandment to Christianity. So when I say I don't sell God, I know that probably doesn't make Jesus happy, but I don't. I really don't spend a time selling God. I have this general belief that great ideas sell themselves. And when it comes to religion, actions and behavior and words are the best way to promote, I think, a spiritual belief, but I don't sell God, but I do. I have to say, I thank God that there was a person out there still who wanted to make sure I didn't end up broken on the rocks of existence. I have to say that. I have to volunteer that. But I don't fit in Seattle. I don't really fit anywhere in this country, and maybe I don't fit anywhere in this world. And I don't think that makes me special. I think there are lots of people like me. I mean, it's funny. If there was a way for me to create some type of club, and I don't mean my little farcical Dr. Freckles Global Tontine Club. I don't mean DFGTC. If there was a way for me to create a club of misfits, you know, and pull all of us together, maybe we could have a community. You know, it's like that old stop motion animation, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and the Island of Misfit Toys. When I was a kid, I loved that part of that, you know, that particular Christmas show. And as I get older, I think I understand why. I felt that way my whole life. I know I'm not the only one. I know that the Misfit Toys loved each other, and they were able to live by knowing that at least there were other people like them who cared. But a lot of us Misfit Toys in the modern world today, in this postmodern world, we're just alone, we're isolated. And God forbid that we choose to disengage from social media, then it really is just a box. We go to a job, we have our polite conversations with people who we have nothing in common with, we're not interested in all the normie bullshit, we don't believe the narrative, and we really don't believe what corporations and the government tells us. And so we're very much alienated. And the comeback of the normies is, well, why don't you just get into sports and get a hobby? Folks, I have a hobby. Actually, I have more than one. I like to write. I do enjoy podcasting. And even though I had to sell my Yamaha keyboard, when I have the money again, I'm going to get, I like the keyboard. I had to sell it. I'm not happy about that. I'm not happy that I sold my Yamaha this last month, because even if I sucked, I enjoyed it. It was a way for me to release stress. I like my harmonicas. I do not claim to be good at the harmonica, but I enjoy it. It's a way for me to express myself. So I have hobbies, but I don't have the right hobbies. I should be playing video games online. I should be playing Elder Scroll. I should be playing, you know, one of these very complex multiplayer adventure games where I'm fighting as an elf or an orc. I should be watching the Seahawks. I should be into the latest band. If Macklemore's playing someplace, I should have bought tickets. Oh, I should be online dating. Yeah, I've done that nonsense. I remember a weird conversation I had with a woman several years ago where I decided on my Plenty of Fish profile to be honest. It's so terrible. I was really honest. And her response was, well, Dan, you're never going to get a date if you tell people this. And I said, well, what you want me to tell you then is that I look like Johnny Depp. I make $300,000 a year. I have no debt. I own my own home and a really nice car. I always vote for the really progressive Democrat / pragmatist globalist scumbag and blah, blah, blah. They want to hear something that isn't real. You know, I look like a pirate and I'm rich. Folks, that's it. This is why I kind of wish there was an island of the misfit toys. I know that when I walked down Yesler a few weeks ago and I saw the homeless people that live in the little sliver of green, I know that they probably wish there was a place like that. And yeah, the frontier was actually a dangerous and brutal place, but it's probably as close as humans get, historically, to an island of misfit toys, a place where the people that don't fit can at least have a chance to live. And let's talk about living for a second. I do think if you're rational, and I know I'm mean sometimes, especially to some of the blockheads of Seattle, but if you're actually rational, you know, you do have to recognize that the bottom part of Maslow's hierarchy, food, water, shelter, it does need to be fulfilled first. But once you've taken care of your belly and your drink and the warmth so you don't get cold at night, the things that come next are love and human connection and community and some sense of belonging. And no amount of water or food or shelter or beer or whatever, weed or Prozac or Twitter or Facebook fixes that. No amount of those things fixes that. Yeah, I can say that, yes, I'm a prideful person at times. And I do think my pride, especially in Seattle, has worked against me. And it's not too late. I mean, you know, thankfully, a lot of people in this town have the memory of a, you know, a hummingbird on crack. So I know that I can get myself together and I can stomach being a software contractor again. I know that's possible. I know that I can get a job and start working again and making money. That's completely feasible. But I also know that that life is going to be just as empty. It'll be just as alienating. And even worse, because I'll have to play the pretend game, that I care about the inconsequential bullshit that my peers care about. I don't. I don't give a shit about the Seahawks. I don't care about the Mariners. I don't give a fuck about your new boat or your sailing. I really don't care that you went on a trip to some place and had some adventure. I don't give a fuck. Okay? I care about human liberty. I care about dignity. I do care about actual human progress. I don't mean make-believe progress, and I don't mean progressives. But I really don't give a fuck about your identity politics. I don't care that you might think there are 78 genders. I really don't. If you're sexually confused, Well, that's your own fucking problem. And I really, really don't give a fuck if you think that there are words that are so terrible, so horrible, that they should be erased. If you've learned anything about me listening to my podcast, you should know that I'm not afraid of words. I mean, I will say there's one word you'll never hear, and that's the N-word, but mainly because I don't have a reason to use it. It is primarily, at this point in American history, I think, a negative word that has very little utility, at least to me. In the black community, I have no doubt that the N-word is useful. But for a white man in 2019, the N-word is about as useful as a glass filled with sulfuric acid. I don't need that walking around Seattle. I also don't need to be uttering the N-word. But that doesn't mean I think it should not be used. And when it comes to all the other words, yeah, I'm not afraid of them. But for me to get along with a nice, polite, politically correct software engineering culture of Seattle, I have to pretend to be one of these THX 1138 drones, a completely devoid of any sense of identity, when I mean real identity, because I decided to layer myself in make-believe identity. I'm Dan. I can call myself white and male and straight. I can call myself Irish and middle-aged. But my real identity is my name is Dan, and I'm not perfect, and I fuck up, and I get lonely, and I often feel joy. I use marijuana, probably sometimes too much, but in lieu of things like alcohol or heroin or crack, so I really don't feel that bad about it. I have dreams still. My dreams seem impossible. And it's funny because one of my dreams is just to have a cabin on a few acres someplace, which in another universe, another life, wouldn't seem so implausibly impossible. But now it might as well be the dream of traveling to Mars. That's how far removed that dream is. I'm deeply in debt. And yet, in a sense, I'm about center of mass in terms of statistical distribution with most Americans. I don't have anything in common with these people. And it isn't just because they might be from someplace else. I do rant about the H-1B visa program because I think it's a form of surrender. I think that when a society says they cannot train their citizens to be engineers and scientists and computer programmers and whatnot, they're basically admitting that they have failed to educate the young. That is admitting something that's horrible. I don't know how anybody in Seattle can be proud of that stupid fucking shit. And yet, they try to turn it into a positive. We're so global. No, you fucking failed your young. You failed your youth. You created an educational system that was really about indoctrination and not about wisdom and understanding. You are a failure. Your public schools are a failure. That is what the STEM crisis, if it's a real thing, that is what the STEM crisis means. You're a fuck up. And your public schools are a fuck up. None of that, none of what I just said fits with the Seattle zeitgeist. So, yeah, I'm in a great mood. And I'm happy that I won't be homeless. And I do believe that as long as I can take another breath and my heart keeps beating, I can have another chance at making this work. But folks, as long as I'm podcasting, you will come to the understanding that whether I have money or not, the basic fundamental existential question of my life has not changed, not one bit. And so on this Friday night, February the 15th, 2019, let me double check because I don't want to. Yeah, yesterday was Valentine's Day. And I know I repeated this, but we honor the death of Valentinus, Saint Valentine, at the hands of the government to celebrate love. Yesterday was Valentine's Day. And today is Friday, the 15th of February. And I hope you have a great night.